The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Hour 1 Podcast.
And very pleasant. Good afternoon. It's great to be back. We were in Birmingham yesterday. We'll have more to say about that later, interviewing a number of the SEC coaches, including Nick Saban and Kirby Smart. Some interesting comments there, as you very well can imagine. So that's where we were then. Today, things have not changed dramatically. There's still a lot of conversation around the country, as we have been discussing, about realignment. You heard yesterday the ACC on the verge of doing away with divisions. You know that's coming in exactly 3 weeks when the SEC meets in Destin. So, and of course, we will be there and talking to many of the coaches. A little bit of a preview of that we were able to get yesterday, and we'll have some of those interviews for you throughout the rest of this week. Today, we'll get into some of the big issues out there, and they are pretty much the same as they have been recently. It's NIL. It's the portal. Nick Saban asked yesterday about tampering with Louisville. You can tell he was none too pleased about that. And other conversations will be with us as well. We'll talk to David Hale in just a few minutes. He covers, among other things, the ACC for ESPN. Brady McCullough later on from the LA Times. Bill Bender from the Sporting News, and Ari Wasserman from The Athletic. Mostly quiet day from the college world today, so we will spend a lot of time talking to you at 855-242-7285. Working throughout the afternoon yesterday, I did not get a chance to hear the show, so some of you are obviously way ahead of me in terms of what the conversation is. But I will say this before we get right to your calls. Even though both Kirby and Nick Saban seem fatigued by the subject, they're also keenly aware of how critical it is. We also were able to sit down yesterday at the region's tradition in Birmingham with the athletic directors of both Auburn and Alabama. A couple of other football coaches around the South were there as well. So a complete update on that. It's always an annual rite of spring for us, and it was extremely cool to be able to get back there really for the first time in 3 years. Last year we were unable to make the trip, and obviously this time 2 years ago there was nothing, literally nothing going on in the sports world. Hard to believe. But there's a lot to talk about. Gus Malzahn will join us tomorrow. He's about to go into the Big 12 with UCF. And beyond that, do we have the Saban tape from yesterday? I don't know if we got a chance to play it or not. But if not, we will try to get that on, because it really has the idea of, and again, I'm not sure exactly how accusatory it was when the question was asked, but clearly it is rare that Nick Saban, who has insinuated, not directly, but that maybe others are out there doing this today. Yesterday he was asked about it, and when you listen to Saban talking, I don't know exactly when we'll. You guys can just let me know when we Billy when we have it. He always says the right thing. He makes sure he covers every angle. It was pretty obvious. The question was toward his program. He just like he did with Jimbo Fisher when he said, "I'm not accusing anyone of doing anything," even though he essentially was yesterday. He said, "I'm not accusing anyone of tampering or accusing us of tampering, blah blah blah. But we don't do it. We don't have to do it." So, as soon as we get that that question for you, we will play it. But until then, we'll get some phone calls at 855-242-7285. And let's start with John, who is in Louisville. Hey, John, good afternoon.
Hey, welcome back, Paul. I was worried. I saw headlines that the GOAT had signed a big $357 million contract with Fox, and I thought, Paul's gone, so I have to tune in tomorrow, and you weren't there.
Yeah, I may sign a contract here for $350 a year, but not $350 million.
Well, at least his wife doesn't have to go back to work when he retires from football, right?
No, absolutely. She's getting. I don't mean to insult her. I think at her age, the fashion week has passed her by. Wouldn't you say?
Well, they probably say that about him as far as playing football. So Tuesday was a great show. There was very little shouting, if none, and very little drama. And I thought Bert Saleh really, his assessment of Jimbo Fisher was just spot on. Do you recall it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. And I don't mean I promise not to interrupt again. But I don't think we really had time to talk about that. But essentially he said – He said that Nick, excuse me, I got the wrong coach.
Jimbo
Fisher is essentially Kevin Sumlin, and that is a major shot if you're sitting there at Texas A&M right now.
Yeah, he's no longer an elite coach, and he said that he win a national championship with Winston, or more likely because of Winston.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an awesome comment, truly.
Yeah, I want to get some reaction from Aggie fans because we really didn't get a chance to really get into that. But Barrett Salee, who's never shy, was a bulldog when it came to A&M.
And legend showed he can carry on a good sports commentation as well. I thought he and you really nailed it when you said the rich are getting richer and it's looking to go the way of MLB.
Yeah, and I ask this question to everyone because we have fans of all, not only SEC schools, but fans of every school listening to us today. But John, which schools are going to be completely left out of this? I think some of them are pretty obvious. I think some of them are not as obvious. But I really feel very strongly that we are heading toward that. I will tell you one thing Saban said yesterday, and I had to bite my tongue, and we'll play it for you tomorrow.
What
we need in college football is more parity. And I'm like going,
here's my quote.
I want to make sure everybody hears the interview in context, but he's concerned about the little guy.
Yeah, here's my comment on Nick Saban. I think he's done a wonderful job of not poaching, but plugging his starting holes. I think there's four starters he's picked up in the transfer portal, and much better job than any other team in college football because they're starters. And here's the question I have. To me, he is using the rest of college football as his farm system. And you have, let's use an example, Paul. You have Texas A&M that signed all, well, we won't get into it, but they signed all those players, new players, to come in to three-year contracts. You had guests on earlier that said, are they tied to that school, or can they sign big contracts with Texas A&M and then go play for Alabama in year two or three?
That is such a great, great question. And, yeah, Saban has gotten players from Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, Louisville.
LSU.
Yeah, and LSU.
Yeah. Hey, last question, Paul.
Sure.
I just put in a new HVA system, and if you could ask Hitman, that's what my daughter calls him lovingly, is a man okay? I'm moving to Ponte Vedra Beach back there next year, so I didn't go with train, but ask him to assess a man, if you would.
I will. I certainly. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Thank you, John. Let's. I think we have the Nick Saban comment here. This was yesterday morning before he teed off in Birmingham. Wow. Nick Saban asked that question yesterday by a reporter for AL.com, and you could tell his reaction was pretty sharp. And I think the reporter, I want to make sure I get this right, and I'll correct this if I'm, I was actually flying when this took place. I had not gotten there yet, but I think it was by Mike Rodak from AL.com who had asked him that question. Let's get some phone calls here at 855-242-7285. Love to hear from you. We have guests all over the place, but time for you to call in. We're back after this.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We welcome you back here on a Thursday afternoon. More of your phone calls in a moment. We'll talk to some guests here, not only about the changing landscape of college football in relation to division. We mentioned the SEC. We'll discuss this shortly in Destin, but some other issues. By the way, Arch Manning out there yesterday in an interview said about Kirby Smart, I love Kirby, and he called Athens, Georgia, the best college town in America. He's not the only one who has said that, but he's the only one who is the most coveted recruit in the country right now who has Georgia on his short list. You people agree with that? I've been to all the campuses all across the country, and I never leave Athens without being incredibly impressed. Let's continue with more of your calls. And Bubba is in North Carolina. Hello, Bubba.
How you doing, Paul?
Bubba, we are doing great. Thank you.
Hey, I called in yesterday and talked to your esteemed replacement host there. And I made a comment, and I didn't get to finish it. Kind of got cut off. And then I-Man called in and said it was a stupid comment.
Oh, really?
And it was a stupid comment if I hadn't been being sarcastic about it. But it was about the 2017 National Championship. Well, I basically said that Alabama, I didn't think, deserved to be in the championship game that year, the playoffs, and that they were getting whipped by Georgia for three quarters, and then Nick Saban makes the greatest decision in the history of college football championships and puts in Tua. I was being sarcastic. He was right. Desperate at that point. Everybody, well, it was obvious he was desperate to make the change.
He put Tua in the second half. It wasn't late in the game.
Yeah, but he had to do something. They were not going to win that football game.
No, that's obvious.
And all I was saying is I was being sarcastic about that fact that he put Tua in. It was just something he had to do. And it looked like a great move after they won the game. If they'd have got trashed in the second half, everybody'd say that was the dumbest thing Nick Saban ever did.
Right.
You know, but that's my only point. But it's just, like I said, this stuff's going to be what it's going to be. Everybody's going to fill a stadium on Saturday, in my opinion, and this other stuff is just fodder.
On that front, Bubba, and thank you, I'm really interested in that because there's so much negativity out there, and people are saying, well, we're never going to watch college football again, and all these things that you hear periodically throughout sports. But is any one of you not going to either go to the game or watch a game because of all this NIL? Is that really going to cause you as a football fan to say, you know what, I'm no longer following college football? I mean, the attendance is, people going to games has been an issue for a long time. Television is certainly at the root of that, and the comfort of home. Let's continue. Steven is up next. Hello, Steven.
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I've been listening the last few years. One question I have is, what do you think the main reason is that state of Alabama doesn't have an NFL football team. I've been following the NFL a lot more than college, but
yeah, I think the answer is very obvious. You know, there are only 32 franchises, and it in terms of the Birmingham metro area, which is where you would put the team, it's simply not big enough. You know, it's also in the shadow of Atlanta. I mean, you leave 1 hour outside of Birmingham going east, you are in the Atlanta television market. So, you know, that's really the biggest issue. You know, there are a lot of people that maintain that in the 70s Birmingham was in a position, but it's not anymore. And let me say this about Birmingham. I'm there a lot. I was there obviously yesterday, and what's going on downtown is phenomenal. I stayed downtown, and I mean, I could look out my hotel window into the new stadium down there. But Birmingham, the NFL has passed Birmingham by. That's no longer even in the equation.
Okay, yeah, I just saw how Jacksonville is a very small NFL market.
But Jacksonville
Birmingham might have a
the city that Jacksonville beat out. Well, maybe it wasn't. Originally, Tampa got the franchise in the 70s over Memphis. And then Memphis came back and had another run. But Memphis is dead, too. Memphis is losing population more than anything. And ultimately, Nashville turned out to be the market in Tennessee, and it was the right call because you don't in smaller markets, you just don't want to put markets on top of markets. Now, we're not talking about New York, Philadelphia. Those are two of the four largest cities in the country.
It was just the state of Alabama. Just there's so much talent football-wise.
But that has nothing to do with it, though. You put a franchise – I mean, let's say – talk about Charlotte, for instance, which is a significantly larger city than Birmingham. It struggles sometimes because the teams have been so bad in terms of attendance. So it's more about television market than anything else. The size of your stadium, the number of people, but it's really and Birmingham's market is bigger than just Birmingham. The Birmingham television market includes Anniston and Tuscaloosa. So there's a lot of people, but you know, You also have to have facilities, and Birmingham has never had the facility either.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I remember growing up in Memphis. I followed it very closely, then living in Birmingham. But, yeah, I mean, there was a story that I pursued without much success, but I think there's a modicum of truth to it, that Paul Bryant did everything he could back in the 70s to keep the NFL out of Birmingham. And I mean, there was evidence to support that. He made some very cryptic comments before, but it may have been a factor, but that's 40 years ago. The guy's been dead 40 years. What he said in the 70s is no longer germane, but ultimately, let me ask people this. Jacksonville used to be one of the great college football towns in the country. Atlanta, Nashville. How are those markets doing now? I'm not suggesting that they don't like college football. I've spent a lot of time in all three. But when you get an NFL team, everything changes. Nothing is bigger than the NFL. Right now it's the number one sport in the country. It's one of the biggest sports in the world. And it's not really even close anymore between the NFL and college. There was a time not long ago that college football was very close to the NFL in terms of interest. That has taken a hit, and do you know why it's taken a hit? Because of the people that are involved in college football. I mean, we watched that embarrassing display last summer of those Power Five commissioners who had a proposal that two of the five commissioners had signed off on, and then the pettiness and the bickering and the idiocy began after that. And then the inane and borderline insane comments of the ACC commissioner on why they were not in favor of expansion, because they wanted to work on other things. So that's why. The NFL, you have a commissioner who is essentially a puppet of 32 billionaires, but he does execute as one person, where in college football, nobody, it sometimes looks like the Three Stooges running around. Let's take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. It's great to have all of you here, and looking forward to chatting with David Hale about so many different things going on. David, thank you for being with us. The ACC certainly getting a lot of attention with their spring meeting. Everyone's getting a lot of attention this time of the year, but they are seemingly joining the rest of the world, not everyone has made it official yet, by changing divisions. What do you know, and what do you think all this means about where the ACC goes from here?
Yeah, I mean, it's not official, but it's as close to official as it's going to get until the vote is finalized. I think they're dotting the I's, crossing the T's, but effectively moving to a divisionless conference where they'll have three sort of permanent partners. And then the other five or the other 10 teams in the league, you'll rotate playing them 5 1 year, 5 the next, back and forth for a home and home. So essentially you'll play every team in the league at home at least once during a 4-year career. All of that makes perfectly logical sense to anyone from the outside. We just haven't ever really done that outside of the 2020 COVID year. For the ACC, I think they view it as a way to sort of help their TV product to some extent, get a little bit more interesting matchups. We don't necessarily have a ton of interest in Syracuse, Florida State every year, but maybe geographically it's better if Florida State can play Georgia Tech more often, or better for rivalries if Wake Forest and North Carolina play more often, and more importantly, to get maybe some better TV slots and maybe a little better TV money. I don't think it's going to necessarily move the needle financially that much, but it's just reality in this day and age. And then, of course, somewhere down the line, hopefully sooner than later, but eventually we will get to an expanded college football playoff. And at that point, I think the goal is get as many teams into that playoff as possible. And that's the other big driver of this conversation.
Yeah, and that's where it's interesting that Jim Phillips came out against that in the short term, because he said the coaches and the administrators in the league wanted to spend more time trying to solve the issues. I may have gotten that somewhat off. I'm doing that quote from memory, but David, you remember covering that story. Has he added anything to that since obviously everyone in college sports has done such a great job of settling all the anxiety with NIL and the transfer?
Amid all of the other questions and problems, it's funny, we talked to Jack Swarbrick today for a little while, and he was asked, are you eager to get back into talking about playoff expansion and how frustrating was that? And he was a bit entertaining in his frustration about where this has all gone. And it was funny to me to think of the fact that he's frustrated because it's all gone south because of the other guy he was sitting in that room with just 10 minutes before that conversation. But he was also kind of listing off the litany of crazy things that the college football leadership has had to deal with over the last 2 years. And he was like, the pandemic, that other thing happened. Like, that's just how crazy it's been, is that's sort of become an afterthought in terms of the problems on their plates. But, look, I think what Phillips was doing was playing the cards that he was dealt to try and help his league out the most. I think we all see, I talked about it, frankly, a good bit this week, the revenue disparities, the issues with how much more TV money the Big Ten and the SEC are already getting and in line to get more of in the coming years. And on top of that, the ACC has a grant of rights deal and their TV deal that runs through 2036, and they're kind of stuck where they are. And I think to some extent, Jim Phillips saw an opportunity to see if he could get some leverage in these conversations and took advantage of it. And I don't know that it has, it certainly hasn't worked out to this point. Whether or not it actually moves the needle at all down the road, I think is still a big open question. But frankly, he didn't have a lot of other moves, so it made some sense, I think, in the short term for them to see if maybe you wiggle something loose by playing hardball on this particular issue. But even he this week sort of said, like, we'll get to 12 eventually. We'll figure it out. But, you know, it's just when it happens. And I think right now we're looking at playing out the string on the current TV deal or the current agreement with the college football playoff. And then the voting changes, and he doesn't need to be on board for it to happen the next time around.
We're talking here, of course, to David Hale covering the ACC meetings. David, and I'm not saying this directed only toward the ACC, because there are a number of SEC schools in trouble. There are a number of schools around the country who are in trouble. What I'm suggesting is that college football, while the administrators talk about breaking away from the NCAA and slowly governing themselves, we are very close to looking at a handful of superpowers and a bunch of also-rans. And how does this league, especially with a seriously depressed television deal, which you alluded to a minute ago, stay in the game when you have the SEC and the Big Ten with its new deal on the horizon, clearly leaving everyone else in the dust?
It's not just a great question, Paul. I think it is the question that absolutely every one of these teams should be asking. I mean, you have great stories of teams like Wake Forest this past year that won 11 games. And I think it's funny how many people this week sort of, as we talked about NIL and the transfer portal and all this stuff, kind of pointed to Wake Forest as the model of, like, you find undervalued talent and develop them and create a culture that they still decide to stay. And that's great. Except in the big picture, Wake Forest doesn't matter in this conversation, because they will never be the financial player that Alabama or Ohio State is. And they're never going to move the needle enough to change that dynamic. But there are some teams in the ACC who can and do want to play in the deep end of the pool with the other big boys. And I think in the short term, there's enough in place and a few other maybe small movements that can be made to keep places like Clemson and Miami competitive with their SEC brethren. Florida State's a much more interesting conversation, because they were already trying to play catch up in a lot of ways, particularly financially, and are just starting to dig themselves out of the hole that they got in. And now somebody else is coming along with a bigger shovel. I think that you can placate them for a couple more years, but the money difference between what those big two conferences are making and what the ACC is making from media rights is just getting bigger. And the value of that grant of rights that they've signed through 2036 gets less and less each year that passes. And eventually the calculus is going to be, we got to get out of this one way or the other, and it's survive by escaping or we die here in the ACC, unless something fundamental changes. And I've asked a lot of people, what's that fundamental thing that could change? I mean, I think there's something to be said that if Florida State and Miami are good again, like to the 1990s level of power, that maybe that moves the needle a little. Is there some way you could convince Notre Dame to join the league full time? Maybe that moves the needle and changes the dynamic. But all of those things are sort of big ifs that you don't have any real control over. And so at some point, very difficult decisions are going to have to be made. I don't think anyone is eager to make them today or next year or maybe the year after that. But at some point in the not too distant future, the math is just going to be the math. And you have to say, if we're Clemson, we want to win national championships, is that still possible to do in the ACC? Jack Swarbrick had a great quote today where he said, in the college football solar system, there are two suns right now, the SEC and the Big Ten, and they are the only ones with a gravitational pull that is sucking everything back towards them. And that's really where we're at. And so when you hear people say, I think we're headed towards two super conferences, that's the reason why.
David, before you go, on the Notre Dame front, everyone maybe had false hope during COVID when Notre Dame played in the ACC, but what would it take, based on the people with whom you visit with and hear from, if anything, to move the needle to get Notre Dame to say, okay, this is what we need to come into your league as a football member?
I think there's a few big philosophical issues that move the needle with Notre Dame. One is, do they have a home for all of their non-football sports? And currently they do. Now, if there is an existential threat to the ACC and Notre Dame doesn't see any other options that would allow them to kind of maintain a similar relationship like they have with the ACC, maybe they'd step in and do it. But even at that point, you're probably better off just joining the Big Ten and making a bunch of money. I mean, they can have their pick of suitors. There is sort of the philosophical issue of tradition with them, of we are just by nature an independent, and that's what we want to do. The more people I talk to, the more that sounds like sort of an old guard notion. And I think some of the younger boosters, the more sort of forward-thinking folks around Notre Dame, are not as tied to independence as some of the longtime Notre Dame fans. Eventually, over time, that can change, but frankly, time is not the ACC's friend on this conversation. And then the last thing is, do they have access to the playoff? Well, they've made multiple playoffs. They haven't won one yet, but they've made them, and they're in contention most years, including last year. So there's really not an impetus for them to make that move when they have shown that even in playing just a 12-game schedule without a conference championship, they still have had access to the playoff as it is, and likely would have more access as the playoff expands. So the things that might drive a genuine change in Notre Dame's approach, I just don't think any of them are particularly likely anytime in the near future.
Well said. What a conversation. David, many, many thanks. David Hale joining us, ACC meetings from ESPN. We're heading to the break. More of your phone calls, reaction to all that after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back, and on a Thursday afternoon, a lot happening here. Great conversation with David. Let's check in with Nicole in North Carolina. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Well, I was calling. Sorry, I thought there was a little echo.
That's okay.
I was calling because if we don't quit mandating these shots, you're not going to have any athletes. These shots are pure bioweapons, and over 400 athletes.
Can you I realize you're probably reading a script there, but can you explain to the lay people in the audience what you're talking about?
Well, I'm not reading a script. This is a lot of research.
Well, no. Well, first of all, I must have missed the first part of this conversation. Who's mandating what right now in May of 2022?
Well. Most of all the athletes have received these clot shots that are killing them.
If I could just pause for 1 second, and what is your what exactly is your evidence for this conversation?
What do you mean?
Well, usually when somebody makes an allegation about someone killing someone with medicine, there usually it would be some substance to it in terms of citing a study, a report.
Well, it's not a medicine.
Something significant rather than just whatever you're talking about.
Well, here. First of all, it's not a medicine. It has not even been FDA approved. If you really do your research, I'm just a stay-at-home mom who has a daughter who plays sports who's fought this mandate. She almost wasn't able to play volleyball because she did not want this shot. Unfortunately,
Nicole, I'm really happy with your daughter's able to play now, and you're obviously a great mother. But I flew on a plane this morning. People were not mandated to wear masks. I don't think today the mandates are anywhere near where they were a year ago. So I'm really a little bit confused by your timing here, but that's okay.
Well, you know, you're right. You may not have had to have worn a mask But it is coming back, I can assure you.
What is coming back? The mandates?
The mask mandates and the COVID vaccine.
I would only say as somebody who flies every week and who has a reasonable understanding of the way government works, I don't think it is, because if it was, then I think you would have seen a more aggressive effort by the president to stop the mandate, and he really is just rolled over because he knows that you cannot stop this anymore. People will not listen. Hey, thank you for the call. Hope your daughter has a great volleyball career. Let's check out Don, who is up next. Hey, Don, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hey, I talked to you about a month or so ago. I played baseball in Tennessee in the late 60s, right. And we talked about the Tennessee baseball team and how phenomenal a job Tony has done. And then after we hung up, some guy got on the phone and said, how can Tennessee be number one if they lost to Tennessee Tech? And Paul, I got to tell you, back in East Tennessee, you've got Tennessee Tech, East Tennessee, Middle Tennessee, and Carson Newman. And they all play good baseball. And when they play Tennessee, it's like their World Series.
Yeah, but you're missing the point. And you understand this because you played baseball. My argument was it was a midweek game, and anybody who follows college baseball knows that midweek games are throwaways. The best pitchers do not
Hello.
Play. Anyway, so it really doesn't matter. Tennessee is still the favorite to win the national championship. Hey, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. Michael is up next in Georgia. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you this afternoon, Paul?
Very well, thank you.
Long-term caller, first-time listener. I just wanted to comment on the guy who was asking about NFL in Birmingham.
Right.
I grew up in the Atlanta area back in the 60s, and my granddad was a big sports nut. And he was grateful that Atlanta had the airport, because he had told us from the get-go that was the difference in Atlanta getting the Braves and the Falcons as opposed to Birmingham.
Yeah. By the way, what I said about Coach Bryan, a friend of his, confirmed that to me. He let it be known he didn't want a franchise there. But if you go back to the 50s and 60s, it was really the leadership in those two communities. Atlanta had very progressive leadership. And I can't remember what year Coca-Cola moved there. No, it wasn't Coca-Cola. It was Delta Airlines. I'm sorry. Coke had always been there. But Delta moving to Atlanta was what really triggered it. In some ways, Birmingham was a better location. It was a little more it was a little closer to the Midwest than Atlanta by about 120 miles. But Delta, once Delta chose Atlanta, it was over.
That is the story I got. The bigger, better supplied airport.
Yeah, and I fly out of Birmingham a lot. I mean, it's a great airport because you can literally drive up to the door.
Oh yeah, I like that. I like the one in Charlotte. I mean, they're just big enough to be efficient and small enough to be comfortable.
Yeah, no, but I will say this about Hartsfield, and you know, everyone talks about it as, you know, with horror stories, but I have found it to be a very efficient airport. You can have a 50-minute connection, which most of the time they would tell you do not do, but you can be if you come in on B terminal, you can be at D in probably under 10 minutes. Where I will say in Charlotte, if you come in at the wrong terminal, you could have a 30-minute walk.
That is true. It can be rough. Well, anyway,
I'm not complaining. It's better than driving.
Oh yeah, better than a lot of them. But like I said, Atlanta is easy if you follow the signs. But
yeah,
then
as somebody who spent a couple of years flying in and out of New York every week, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, although millions of people have to deal with it. There's nothing quite like that. We're out of time for this hour. Two, three more hours to go. We hope you'll stick around.